And welcome to Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes. Two ways for you to interact with us here on the program, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Today we're going to get into some free agency news. There's some news and notes around the league, how that may impact the NFC East. We'll delve into that. We'll get to your phone calls. We'll get to your tweets. We'll also get into the combine. But we want to start off, Paul, with an interesting article on NFL.com as free agency nears. The new league year is going to start March 9th, which is, believe it or not, around the corner.
And yeah,
they put a list together. This is written by Greg Rosenthal on NFL.com. A fun player addition for each NFC team. If you were to project a free agent that could move and change uniforms, what NFC team would be a good fit for that player? And obviously, we'll focus in on the NFC East since that's
sure.
the division that impacts the Giants the most.
And it's a fun list, by the way.
Yes, it
there
is.
There are
a very
guys
fun list.
Throughout the list to talk about.
So for the Giants, let's start there. The article says that Latavius Murray, who is the running back for the Oakland Raiders, would be a good mm-hmm. fit for the Giants, given the fact that obviously they parted ways with Rashad Jennings, and Paul Perkins seems to be now the workhorse on the team. And he was a player that we've thrown around even earlier this year on the program, Paul, when we were talking about projected free agents and who may be a good fit. I know you threw out Eddie Lacy of the Green Bay Packers, but perhaps that bigger back that could be a complement to Paul Perkins. And Murray, I'm sure, is going to receive a lot of interest because he's coming off a very productive year with the Oakland Raiders.
Yes, he is. This is a guy, though, that for my taste, and I know the fumbles don't necessarily disqualify him from the conversation because you can always teach a guy how to hold on to the ball better. Remember Tiki Barber. It is an issue for me, though, that would have to be fixed. It would have to be addressed. He does tend to put the ball on the ground a little bit too much for me. But this is a guy who we've had callers ask me about him, and I've also had tweets about him as well. I don't think he's the same style of runner, despite the fact that he's a bigger frame as a Eddie Lacy type. Lacy, to me, is more of the power back, the bowling ball type of back that I think the Giants need to fit their system. To me, and please feel free to disagree, I think he is more of a, I hate to use the word finesse when I talk about a running back because then people want to take that as a negative. I don't want to paint that as a negative. He's not a bowling ball type of back. That just that simple. That's the best way I could say it. To me, he's not going to keep those legs churning and bouncing off guys and getting yards after contact. That's not the kind of runner he is, despite the fact that he's a larger back. Would you agree?
No, I think that's a fair assessment for Latavius Murray. Remember, they had DeAndre Washington, so they had two guys that they really bounced off of one another in Oakland. And Washington's a smaller back, but to me, based on what you just threw out, Washington, to me, is the tougher runner of the two in Oakland.
Okay.
Even though he was smaller, the way they utilized Washington, he's the guy that could keep churning and take on a few more tackles.
The pounder
and move the pile.
Or
correct.
The grinder.
Exactly. Whereas Murray's the bigger back, but believe it or not, even though he's the bigger back, to me, he's the shiftier of the two. The
yeah.
guy that can run in between the tackles but also run off the edge, and he's also a very good receiver out of the backfield, too.
Yes.
Now, the Giants, I think, have that in the form of Paul Perkins, but in my opinion, you can never have enough guys that can catch the ball out of the backfield, and pass protection is something else you need to take into consideration.
You could make an argument that Murray is a little more out of the Rashad Jennings style, to be perfectly honest, because Rashad Jennings was not a bulldozer. He was not a bowling ball. He was not a pinball. You know, the Giants had that mixture. I'm still of the opinion they need more of a power guy. So, but I understand it. It's not a horrible suggestion, but I think they could go in a little bit of a different direction.
Well, and part of the rationale behind the suggestion, because obviously there's a little write-up
yes.
underneath each and every one of these suggestions, is the fact that based on Rashad Jennings leaving, there is perhaps an opening for a running back to come to the Giants, and that's understandable.
Sure.
Now, just like the narrative is going to change once free agency ends, and then you start to focus on where the Giants are going to go in the draft, that's going to be based on whatever they fill or they lose in free agency. Just want to run through some of the other teams, and obviously we'll open up the phone lines and get into more with respect to the conversation. The Eagles, they have a cornerback, Tremaine Johnson, who was with the Rams this past season. He was given the franchise tag. They
mm-hmm.
had to determine whether or not they wanted to keep Tremaine Johnson or Janoris Jenkins, who wound up signing with the Giants. They gave Johnson the tag, lost Jenkins. So now they're going to have to make a decision about Tremaine Johnson again. And I could just tell you, based on the surface, Paul, The Eagles have revamped their secondary each and every offseason. This is another year that you add to the list where, once again, they need corner help. I mean, based on the results that came forth last season.
Yeah, they seem to have solidified their safety spot over the last couple of years with guys who can play, but the corner has just been a mystery for them for the longest of times. And look, I'm not going to lie to you. Every time I see a team going to play Philadelphia, the first thing I say is, you can attack the corners. I mean, that's just the way it is.
And a big issue.
And how do they cover it up? Well, they try to cover it up with their safety play and pass rush. Because, let's face it, the secondary's best friend is a defensive line that gets to the quarterback. And that's how they try to make do. They try to cover up their inadequacies at corner with the other positions. But ultimately, that's probably one of the premier reasons why the Philadelphia Eagles have not won a Super Bowl.
Yeah, Malcolm Jenkins has really been the one stable force on the back end of the secondary. He's the safety. Other than that, I mean, everybody around him has changed. They brought in Rodney McLeod from the Rams, who I mentioned. So this is going to be year two for him. But the corners, it's been a game of musical chairs. It's a big reason why Philadelphia's had some issues in terms of their coverage down the field. As far as the other teams, the Washington Redskins, this is an interesting one. They have Dontari Poe, Kansas City Chiefs defensive tackle.
Right.
Now, I think Kansas City is going to do everything in its power to retain him, whether it mean giving him the franchise tag. The problem is, Paul, remember, the Chiefs also have Eric Berry, the safety,
yes,
who's going to be a free agent. So they're going to have to decide who gets the tag, who gets the long-term deal, or in an ideal world, hopefully they can work out a long-term deal. But I'd be very surprised if Kansas City is going to lose Poe, given the impact that he's had on the team and some of the other players they recently lost on the defensive side of the ball.
You know, I was listening to Pat Kerwin, a coworker of yours over at Sirius, and I just think the world of Pat. I love listening to him. And he specifically addressed this just the other day, and he was saying that, you know, if you're the Chiefs, you probably can't keep all your key guys this year because you're going to have guys you got to restructure. You got guys who are on the other side of 30. You got Poe. You got Perry. He's like, you know what? It's probably a mistake to try to keep both of them. He was of the opinion that if you're going to restructure some of the veterans who were there, the guys like Ali, you're going to probably regret it a year or two down the road because you're going to set yourself back really bad in terms of cap because it's going to take a lot of money and restructuring to get Berry and Poe under the same umbrella. And that could be very dangerous for them, especially since I think you could make an argument that the Chiefs think that they're in the window right now.
Oh, they certainly are in the window.
So if they're in the window right now, you know, and they go for it and then don't get it, they're going to pay for it down the long term. He was suggesting they might want to try to retool one or two of those spots, see if they can make it happen with some guys in the draft. Defensive line is plentiful in the draft. That maybe they could do that and still turn some things over and help more of their holes. Interesting thought, but Poe's a heck of a player.
He is. Well, Kansas City has had one of the best defenses in the NFL. I think they're one of the most underrated defenses, and that's the identity of the team. If I'm KC, I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure you can keep those pieces together, similar to what the Giants are looking at right now.
Mm-hmm.
They're coming off a solid year continuity. You
exactly.
Keep everybody
You'd
together.
You'd like to.
And the last one is the Cowboys. They also have them addressing defense.
And listen to this one, folks.
Well, you know what? As crazy as it sounds, though, he wants to continue his career, and we've seen players reunite with their old teams, and they have DeMarcus Ware, the defensive end slash linebacker with Denver, perhaps reuniting with the Cowboys. And it fills a need for both sides because Ware is likely going to move on from Denver. The Broncos are also retooling their defense, trying to get a bit younger, and also they may address the quarterback position this offseason. And the Cowboys, you know, they didn't have many pass rushers last season. They could use a veteran like that to add
it
to the mix.
I would only say this. I do believe that this guy who over the years has had his share of injuries and is certainly long in the tooth at this point. And if you look at his numbers the last couple of years, they have steadily declined. The last 3 years, in fact, from
he's
10
also
sacks.
Been hurt. He was hurt last season.
10 sacks to 7.5 in 11 games and then 4 in 10 games last year. In my mind, that's probably throwing emotional money at a player as opposed to productive money at a player. If I were the other teams in the NFC East, I would love to see DeMarcus Ware get a good buck to go back to Dallas. I just don't think there's much gas left in that tank. And, you know, if they want to – they got cap issues already. They want to do that, go ahead and do it.
Well, here's the thing, though. If you give him a 1 or 2 year deal, you still think that's even bad. I mean, a veteran like that, you give
him
a 1 or 2 year
deal. Here's the thing. Where, if he wants to go back there, then he'll take a low number with incentives.
Correct.
And that will be easier for Dallas to deal
and
with.
And I can see that happening.
If Ware still wants to get paid, it's going to be hard for me to understand how the Cowboys can justify it. If he's going to want, you know, X number of bucks with bonus and guaranteed money because he wants to cash, I don't think he's that player anymore.
Well, he certainly has declined. There's no doubt about that. And Dallas also needs to look at it through this lens. They have a number of free agents in the secondary. They have free agents across the board on defense.
They just did the offensive line again. They restructured the O-line.
To give themselves more flexibility to try to see if they want to re-sign some of the secondary players.
I mean, like, they got issues.
That's one of the things that they're going to certainly have to address. But they could use some additional bodies on the defensive line. That was one of their major weaknesses, the pass rush, getting sacks and getting to the quarterback. So that is the latest from NFL.com. Check out that article where they project perhaps a good fit free agency-wise with that new team. And we threw out who's going where in the NFC East that they say, but they go through the entire NFC, and we'll obviously take some more of your phone calls on this topic moving forward. That is going to wrap up our opening segment here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. If you want to watch the remainder of the program, you can head to Giants.com. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Beto here. Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We start off the program focusing on an article up on NFL.com with recommendations for players to move to different teams within the NFC. We'll also get your thoughts on the upcoming Combine, which starts up next week. And there's a lot of news and notes and rumors around the NFL. Specifically, yesterday, the breaking news was the fact that Jay Cutler appears to be on the trade block. According to ESPN.com, the Bears are looking for a trade partner. He has a few years left on his contract, but it seems obviously, Paul, that they want to head in a different direction.
Yeah, it does, and I can't blame them. You know, John Fox was kind of saddled with Cutler when he got to Chicago. He knew that at that point with the salary cap number the way it was, and he wasn't going to be able to get rid of him. He was going to have to at least ride him out for a bit, and now they're going to see what they can do. I think what I'm most curious about, and folks, I don't know how much you're paying attention to the other teams in the Giants division, but how will free agency shake up this division? The Giants certainly have some guys they'd like to hold on to but may not be able to. Kirk Cousins is still a very interesting storyline. Until that thing gets settled, that's a hot potato as far as I'm concerned. And even if he agrees to the one-year franchise tag and he winds up not signing a long-term deal, that's a lot of resources for 1 year to tie up into Kirk Cousins, albeit I think the Redskins should keep him. I think they're better off with him than without him.
I would agree.
But the number is too high, and it will hurt them if they've got to use that franchise tag on him.
Well, considering, like any other team in the NFC East, they have other needs. You know, they certainly have defensive issues. That was one of the things that I think held them back this season. I don't think the offense was a major problem. DeSean Jackson is a free agent. If they lose him, if they re-sign him, that also changes
That's
the dynamics of the money. So there's a number of question marks in Washington. That's why I always say, if you've seen enough from your young quarterback, Paul, it's extremely beneficial to give them a long-term deal and spread the money out and then not have to worry about it year in and year out. Because then what happens if he plays another solid year, Paul, and then you determine now you want to give him a long-term deal, his value now went up. So it's just going to cost you more in the long run. You might as well hammer out the deal now if you're watching the Redskins.
And there are those people in Philadelphia that think that while they try to retool that secondary, that their defensive line is going to have to undergo either some significant restructuring or maybe guys getting cut, which, of course, is something that, you know, they've always been relying on the last few years in terms of we want to have this fearsome defensive line, this wide nine, this scheme that's going to, you know, rely on the pass rush. And now all of a sudden, you know, because it hasn't gotten them a title, they're forced with a case of trying to juggle numbers around where they may not be able to keep all those D linemen anymore.
201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Let's open up the phone lines. Plenty that we have thrown out. Plenty to discuss. Starting off the festivities, we got Matt in East Islip. Matt, what's happening?
What's going on, guys? It's been a while since I called, so it's good to be back.
Sure.
Good to have you aboard.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I wanted to talk to you guys a little bit about free agency, the draft at the tight end position. I've been following the draft ever since I was 10 years old, so for another 13 years now. And Paul, like you, I watch a ton of film and love it. And I think a lot of people think the Giants will go after a Martellus Bennett or somewhere along those lines and spend the money. But I really don't think the need is as crazy as people think it is. If you look at, you still got Jarrell Adams, who he's only in year, going to be in year two. You got Will Tye, who can be a really good number two tight end. And I think this tight end class in the draft is so deep. I think the needs financially need to be spent on the defense and bringing guys back like JPP and Hankins and maybe a number two receiver, however you want to look at it that way. And I wanted to talk about some possible tight end prospects in the draft that I like. And I don't know even if it's in the first round or not, but a couple guys like Njoku from Miami.
He was in the All-Star games.
And is unreal.
Did well there. Had a good practice also at the Senior Bowl, I believe.
He did. And then another low-level guy that I think a lot of people don't really know about is Adam Shaheen. He's from Ashland. I don't know if you ever heard of him. He's a D2 kid, 6'7", about 280. Athleticism off the charts. There was actually an article about it. I know Matt Miller is a big fan of his, and I watched his tape. He's a man amongst boys. I know it's D2, but the physical traits are there, and then the potential, I think, is sky high for him. And then, of course, I think you got to look at a guy even like Jake Butt. Now, I know he's coming off an ACL.
Right.
But, you know, he reminds me of a guy. I know, Paul, you and I, a couple years back, liked Arthur Lynch out of Georgia.
And yeah, who, by the way, got hurt when he got to the league. Lynch got hurt when he got to the league and was a total washout.
Right. He was. But in college, there was no doubt that style of play fit the Giants.
He really did. I'm sorry to see it happen. Although, heck, you know what? That's part of the game, right?
That's right.
It's part of the game.
Yep. So, you know, I think that I want to hear your guys' take as far as free agency versus the draft. I think, do you guys think that it would be a better situation for the Giants to go after a guy in the draft because it's so deep and save the money to go after the guys elsewhere? I think that's just a better situation for the Giants, honestly, than rather go out and spend it on a guy like a Martellus Bennett or Jack Doyle. I don't know. Go on and hear what you guys have to say about that.
I'm more inclined to agree with you and not spend a lot of money on a free agent tight end. I would like to see them grab someone in the draft. Now, the question becomes, which one of the guys on the roster do you think are truly keepers? Now, for me, Will Johnson is a hybrid, but he's a keeper.
Right.
Jarrell Adams is a keeper. Beyond that, in my mind, everybody else is in make-it mode. Will Tye has to prove he can make this roster this year. Matt Lacoste, who I like, has to prove he can stay healthy and make it on this roster this year. Larry Donnell, we've heard the reports that he won't be coming back as a free agent. To me, there are only two guys, and one of them's a hybrid, that have spots locked up on this roster. So I would disagree with you about Will Tye. You got him slotted in as a two. I think he's in make-it mode. That's just me. And I think that there are guys, you know, in my mind, you want to bring in at least one drafting tight end and maybe one low-priced free agent tight end, like an Anthony Fasano, let's say.
Right, a veteran.
You know, and let these guys come in and compete. I love competition. One of the things I've always said, and this goes back now for many, many, many years, I've always believed that one of the best ways to improve your team isn't necessarily to go out and get player X, because either he's going to cost a lot of money or you're going to have to use a higher draft pick on him. I think one of the best ways to improve your team is to enhance the competition and let competition naturally help you improve your team. And I think you can do that in certain spots, not necessarily a quarterback where you need the pure talent to do it. But in some of your supplemental spots, I think competition itself can help your team get better. And for me, outside of Will Johnson, as I said, and Jarrell Adams, I'm opening up the tight end spot to pure competition.
Well, if you look at the track record of this team, they brought in Daniel Fells not too long ago, a veteran who was looking to latch on with a team to bring in some competition, and then he wound up carving out a role for himself before he got hurt. That's the track record of the Giants, much more so than, Matt, what you alluded to, and I'm not saying you were recommending they go after Martellus Bennett, but that would be the complete opposite of what the Giants have done in years past, which would be to make a big splash at that position when, you know, you think about some of the names that have come in, even when Martellus Bennett came in. Martellus Bennett was Jason Witten's backup. He was looking to become a starter. He was not a high-priced possession type of tight end that everybody was knocking on the door for, and then he made a name for himself. You know, the Jake Ballards, the Kevin Bosses, late round picks, undrafted guys, unproven commodities, the Giants, that's been their track record, much more so than going out and getting a household name. So I think if you go based on the track record, I would be surprised then if a guy like Martellus Bennett would return to the Giants.
Sure, and I agree with that definitely. And Paul, I think, like you said, with competition, I think you'll see that out of the running back group this year as well. You got guys like Vereen, Perkins, Darkwa. You know, they'll probably bring in a guy along the lines, who knows, like a Eddie Lacy or a Murray, and who knows, maybe they'll draft a guy there as well. But I think that only, you know, iron sharpens iron, as they say, and
yeah.
I think that would only, you know, do a beneficial, you know, situation for the Giants.
Let me ask you a question.
Go ahead, yeah.
How do you want to make up the tight end position? Because if you're going to use Will Johnson as a hybrid and use him some as an H-back and a fullback, then the truth is actually you could keep not only two other tight ends. If you want to slot Will Johnson even as a fullback on your roster, you could keep as many as three other tight ends. Now, how would you like to fill those spots? See, for me, you have to decide – do you want to fill those spots with either a pass catcher, who, as you know, the Giants certainly could use more production out of the tight end spot in the passing game, but you also know that I'm a power guy. I want to get physical with people. So to me, now, do you want to fill those other two spots with one receiving tight end, an upgrade over Will Tye potentially, and a blocker, or do you just want to go with Will Johnson and two tight ends? And how do you view Jarrell Adams? Because if you view him one way, you got to get the contrasting tight end to fill the other spot.
Right. And I think the thing with Jarrell Adams is you don't know enough about him yet. I really don't think you do.
It's hard.
He's been so in between. And I think, you know, I also think if you get a receiving tight end like David Njoku in the draft, that could potentially also help the receiver position, because now you don't have to fight as much to say, okay, we need a solid number two or whatever, because I think Sterling Shepard's the number two anyway, and I don't want to hear that argument, you know, from anyone else. I think he's obviously the clear-cut number two, and I think you need to bring in a number three at that point to replace Cruz. But I think Roger Lewis could do that, and I think at the tight end position, if you bring in a receiving guy like Njoku, that could take a little pressure off the Giants looking for that other receiver as well. So
yeah, but what takes the pressure off the passing game even more? Moving the chains with a power running game, and if you got a nice 260-pound tight end who's going to get those first downs for you, now that's going to open things up too.
Well, and I think that's why you need – the Giants have always looked for, like, a balanced tight end, and I think that's what they're really looking for, because even, like, a guy like who I didn't like at all, Brandon Myers, I mean, that guy could not block to save his life, but he was a quote-unquote receiving tight end.
Exactly. How'd that work out?
Exactly. Horrible. And, you know, I love Jake Ballard. Jake Ballard was – I think he had a ceiling to be better than Kevin Boss was. I think he would have been a great fit. So I think to answer your question, Paul, I think they need a balanced guy. I think they really do. They need a guy who can do both. And I really, the only guy I see that could really do that immediately for the Giants, and who knows if he'll be there, is O.J. Howard. I think he would be that pick. You know,
I'm going to take you back a little ways. The guy they need is Dan Campbell. You remember Dan Campbell?
I don't. Fairly young.
Okay.
He was the coach for the Dolphins.
Yeah, he was the interim Dolphins.
Yes. Yeah. When Dan Campbell was here, when he played with the Giants, he was in that era between Howard Cross and Jeremy Shockey. Dan Campbell was the perfect blend of hard-nosed, blue-collar, physical, tough, strong, blocking tight end who just had enough size to be an effective blocking tight end but also had enough athleticism that you could throw him the ball if you needed to and keep people honest. Dan Campbell, if I could clone him today, that's the guy I would want for the Giants right now.
Matt, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in. You got it. In terms of balance, I mean, if Will Johnson is fully healthy, you know that he could block and you know he can receive the football.
Without question.
I think what Jarrell Adams showed in his rookie campaign, a little bit more of an opportunity to receive the ball when some of the other tight ends were banged up.
It appeared that way.
As opposed to immediately coming in and becoming that blocker. I think there's room for improvement. There's upside in his blocking. But if you were to ask me, Jarrell Adams after 1 year, special teams and receiving tight end. I think those are the two things that at least stand out to me when you evaluate his game.
I think that's fair.
And it's a matter of what do they see him moving forward as being. Is he going to be a receiving guy or can he be that jack of all trades? That, I think, is going to have to be proven throughout the course of OTAs and training camp. But Will Johnson is a guy currently on the roster that he's got an MO of being able to block. I don't think that's necessarily a question. All right, let's head back to the lines. We got Adam in New York. Adam, what's happening?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Doing well, Adam. Hi. What do you got for us?
Well, I wanted to talk about the draft also, but I was thinking more of cornerbacks. But just to tag along with what you guys were saying about the tight ends there, I do remember Dan Campbell, by the way. I'm only 25. I don't know what that says about me. But I disagree with you there, Paul, about Dan Campbell. I think we need more of a – or I guess it's either between getting a Dan Campbell-like guy, but then you need a solid X receiver – or you could get a guy like Jeremy Shockey, ideally, and then the outside receiver, you could almost even leave that blank and pencil in Tavares King or Roger Lewis Jr.
Let me just say something before you go any further about Shockey. Yes, he put up very exciting receiving numbers, but Jeremy Shockey was a heck of a blocker. He really was.
Right.
And the thing with him was he didn't always put his mind to it. Didn't always want to do it, griped a lot when he was asked to do it. But Jeremy Shockey was a much grittier physical blocker than so many people gave him credit for because he was going to the Pro Bowl as a receiving tight end. And a lot of folks ignored the fact that, you know what, he did a nice job there on the edge. He really did. He wasn't Mark Bavaro. He wasn't Howard Cross. He wasn't those guys. But Jeremy Shockey was a much better blocking tight end.
He didn't shy away from contact.
Not at all. Yeah. He was a much more complete tight end than people ever gave him credit for. That's all I want to say about him. So, I don't want to throw Shockey's name around with the receiving tight ends because, to me, when you talk receiving tight ends of the last 15, 20 years with the Giants, you're talking Brandon Myers, didn't work out so well. You're talking Pete Mitchell, who, by the way, they had gone to a Super Bowl that year with Pete Mitchell as the receiving tight end. But you know what? Pete Mitchell was not real eager to block anybody either. And those guys, they give me the hives, you know what I mean? I need my tight end to get after people.
Yeah, no, and it's funny because the guy who's to be the most Shockey-like is the guy from Miami, the guy he mentioned, Njoku.
Right.
Seems to be a two-way tight end. From what I've read, he seems to be a two-way tight end out of the gate. Who's actually the more dynamic one between him and Howard.
Well, what you need to see with these guys, and I'm going to let you finish in just 1 second, make it clear here. It's, yes, about their physical tools, no question. They've got to have the physical tools to be able to do both if you want them to do both. But where it really comes from is in here. It's got to come from inside. Because if you have a tight end who's of the mentality that I'm going to be an ESPN Sports Center guy. I'm going to be a receiving tight end. I'm going to catch 100 yards, go to the Pro Bowl, catch 10 touchdown passes. Well, that's the problem. If the tight end is of that mentality, you will never get him to block effectively on 3rd and 1. It's not going to happen. Case closed. If it's not here and it's not in here, he's not blocking.
Well, blocking is like playing defense in basketball. You have to want to do it. It can be taught, but you have to want to do it.
Yes,
that's
to do
to
it well.
The best compliment. Yeah. What else you got, Adam?
My main point was going to be about cornerbacks in the second and third round. I don't know whether you guys think they would target. Like they talked to Rasul Douglas, the West Virginia tight end at the Senior Bowl, who's a 6'2", 200-pound corner who's basically built exactly like DRC and has the hands like DRC. but might be still a little raw and would benefit from a year under the system, I think, local Jersey guy. I don't know whether you think they would target a guy like that relatively early, now, obviously not a first pick, but in the second or third, whether they would target depth for the defensive backs.
Well, see, here's where you have to wait and see what happens in free agency before you can answer a question like, would they go after depth at corner? Because, I mean, what happens with Wade this offseason? What happens with Leon Hall? Those are two guys that were providing depth at that position. If they're no longer in the picture, then my answer would probably lean towards, yeah, I could see them maybe thinking about a corner that high in the draft. But if you bring back your core, maybe the necessity is not there as it would have appeared if you didn't have everybody back. So I think that free agency is really going to change the outlook of the drafting of a cornerback from that perspective.
I agree with that. I guess I'm more assuming that they target all the main high points they need to target in free agency, like bringing back the defensive front, hopefully bringing back Keenan Robinson too, and getting one piece for the line, the offensive line.
See, the problem with that philosophy is you're going to run out of money real quick. That's the problem. That's the problem.
Not going to have a lot of flexibility.
You're going to run out of money real quick. You know, you're not going to be able to get all the soft spots taken care of before the draft. There are going to be a couple of weak spots there that need to be addressed in the draft. And what you have to figure out is, A, which ones are they going to be? And B, how much is it going to cost you to do it? I think in answer to your question, which is your real question, you want to know about the Giants secondary. In my mind, I would like to see them perhaps enhance the competition on the back end of the depth chart, whether it be at safety or at corner. But to do that, you may not need to go higher than the fourth or fifth round. You may not need to sign anything more than a veteran journeyman free agent. You may even be able to get an undrafted rookie free agent.
Andrew Adams this year. Undrafted.
Who can come in and give you competition. That's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking I need competition back into the depth chart in the secondary, which means I'm not touching anybody there until at least the third day of the draft, if at all.
And the other thing is, okay, if you're talking second round, Adam, too, you know, usually your first and your second round pick, you want those guys to step in and make an immediate impact as opposed to, you know, somebody to come in and compete for maybe like the fourth or the fifth cornerback spot.
Yeah, it just doesn't make sense to me.
It doesn't necessarily equate to the value out of what you should be getting from that selection.
I'm just used to going to the Giants threads during the game and seeing Wade and Hall and Sensabaugh being trashed all game.
Well, you want to see them upgraded. You want to see those guys upgraded, well, and it's entirely possible to provide competition and upgrades later in the draft or again, signing guys. You don't have to draft in the first three rounds to upgrade off of them. You don't.
And appreciate the phone call, Adam, and don't overlook the value of Leon Hall, by the way. I mean, Hall came in, played safety this season, you know, made an interception in the Cowboys game. Yeah, he made some critical plays down the stretch. Now, part of that is because he's a veteran and he can easily transition from one position to another. But I think there's value in having somebody who's experienced as part of your depth chart as opposed to saying, well, let's bring in a bunch of young guys and hope that all of a sudden they can develop in less than a year.
Remember now, Hall is an unrestricted free agent. I don't even know what his plans are. He's been in the league a long time.
Course.
Came back
he
from back surgery to play for the Giants.
Yeah.
He may not want to play again, so don't count on him.
I'm not necessarily looking at next year. I was looking at the comment from the caller saying he doesn't want to see those guys again be back on the team. And
I
would argue that I think Leon Hall made plays this season, and he wasn't just one of those guys that they were just throwing out there
keeping their fingers
crossed. Correct. It was more in response to that than necessarily that he's a guarantee to return. You're right. We don't know whether or not he wants to continue his career, and he's logged a lot of years and reps and so forth. Let's head back to the phone lines. We got Nick in the Meadowlands. Nick, what's happening?
Hi.
How you doing, Nick?
Guys?
Doing well, Nick. What do you got for us?
I just wanted to talk about running back, but first I wanted to tell you guys like a little story, if you don't mind.
Sure. What do you got?
I grew up in Las Vegas, you know, and I had a coach that played offensive tackle in the 80s. His name is Art Plunkett. Paul, you might remember him. I don't know. He's more of a special teams guy. But he came to our high school, and he became a defensive line coach. And I played linebacker, loved the Giants, loved LT. And he said, you want to play quick end? You know, we put you on the line in a two-point stance on the weak side, and you just go where the ball goes. Loved it. had the best of both worlds. Got to work with technique, learning from him. You know, he went up against guys like LT and Reggie White, and then got to hit with the linebackers. But the thing with running back, there was a guy. I went to Las Vegas High School on the east side of Las Vegas, and we had a big rival on the east side, and the high school was El Dorado, and Steven Jackson played there. And I'll never forget the first time I hit him. I said, I got to get my pad level down. You don't want to go head up with a guy. He was big then.
Yeah.
You know, he was like 6'1" then, and I was, you know, just over 6 foot tall and about 195 pounds. And I said, I got to hit him from the side more. I got to get an angle on him and get low. Well, I did better whenever I did that. But my whole point is, I'm with you, Paul. I want, you know, like a Jennings. He was on that upside of 6 feet tall. He was like 6'1", wasn't he?
Might have even been 6'2".
I'm sorry.
Tall guy. You're right. He was over 6.
You want a guy that, you know, another guy that came out of Catholic school, kind of like your Don Bosco here, Bishop Gorman. DeMarco Murray came out of there.
Mm-hmm.
He's on the shorter side, but
more of a fire hydrant, fire plug kind of guy.
Jackson was a big boy, you know, when he got to the pros,
mm-hmm,
and in college. But you could bring him down, and that's what happened with Jennings. I'm with you. I've been doing my research, Paul. P. Ryan, I think that's what we need, man. I think that is exactly that bowling ball. That, because I learned lessons with guys that are shorter, you know, 5'10", 5'11", and they're big. I think he's like 237 he's listed. He's going to get bigger even probably. That's a lot harder to bring down right there, and I think that's perfect.
I learned my lesson about guys like that who have balance, leverage, the ability to keep churning. When little Joe Morris became the yes. Giants running back and led them to that Super Bowl 21 championship, you know, Joe, I remember when he came out of Syracuse, and I'm going to tell you something. They drafted him behind Butch Wolfolk, who was very, very high headline guy out of Michigan, you know. And Butch was bigger, more slender, more athletic, so to speak. But what happened? You know, Butch wound up flaming out, and Joe wound up being the guy who was toeing the rock for Bill Parcells and company. And what I learned, and this is in my early years of covering, you know, in the mid-'80s, what I learned real quick from watching Joe is that those guys who have thick thighs, okay, and are lower to the ground like a fire plug, boy, they cause defenses a lot of headaches. They really do.
Well, a good example would be Maurice Jones-Drew. 5'7", the guy had thighs, you know, that were like rocks, and he would
Earl Campbell thighs.
Yeah, so that's why, Nick, I don't necessarily go by the school of thought that a guy's got to be 6'1 or 6'2 to all of a sudden be successful. You know, Devontae Freeman, for example, is on Atlanta. He's 5'9", and the Falcons had one of the best running attacks in the NFL.
Well, but see, in those days, back in the 80s, when you talked about the small running backs, the guys who were 5'10 or so, 5'11 maybe, but more like 5'10 guys, they were more scat backs for the most part. They were short, little, quick guys.
Shifty.
You know, shifty.
Yeah.
And the thinking was that, you know what, those smaller guys, they're probably not going to be power guys. They're going to be more finesse guys, cutback guys, quickness, speed guys. Joe Morris broke that mold. Joe Morris was incredibly strong, tough, physical, and powerful, but he was little Joe. And so to me, he was a new style of back who I then became enamored with as a workhorse who could provide the power running game despite what were small measurables. And, you know, you'll love my comparison with Pirine, Natron Means.
Yeah, he was a big
right?
boy. He was like 250. He was like 250. Yeah.
And Means was not a tall guy. He was under six feet.
And growing up out west, I used to watch a lot of the Chargers, so I know exactly what you're talking about.
That's my guy.
Natron Means.
Pirine is Natron Means.
Well, what about Jerome Bettis? There's another one too. I mean, Bettis.
Oh, yeah, the Bucks,
Bettis was
5'11"
though.
He's a fullback.
But Bettis. That's the thing. Bettis was more of a fullback body. I'm talking about a powerful halfback who doesn't necessarily have the John Riggins body, the Bettis body, Pete Johnson, you know, Andre Franklin. You know, we all could put a 250-pound Christian Okoye. I mean, those guys were yeah. fullback bodies. Now
the Nigerian nightmare.
Exactly. I'm talking about. I'm Pete Johnson. Pete Johnson was another one of those guys.
You referenced earlier.
Yeah. But, I'm talking about a halfback who just has that low center of gravity and thick thighs.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what my whole point was. I mean, you have some big backs that are power, you know, runners, but they're also shifty, you know, like Steven Jackson was. You know, he's a really good football player, really good. But I like I said, I did my research, Paul, and they're saying second or third round, and I say, you know, with a late pick in the second round, I think we, you know, if you're listening, Jerry Reese, we definitely got to get this guy because I don't think he's going to be there in the late third round. And I really been listening to what you're saying, Paul, and I did the research, and I like what I see with this guy. I think he's perfect.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Like, and, if you heard me say on the show, that I think John the other day, one of my personnel gurus said to me, you're not getting him in the third round. And,
yeah,
and he's been floating under the radar for like a couple of months now, and I was thinking third would be good for him. And my guy really smoked me with a big bucket of ice water when he said, you don't get him in round two, you're not getting him.
That's why I'm saying, if you're listening to Jerry Reese, get him in round two. You know, he's not going to be there. But did you hear of Art Plunkett, Paul?
Yeah, he played for the Cardinals, right?
He was drafted by the St. Louis Cardinals, yes. And then some injuries happened, and the Patriots picked him up. He played in that Super Bowl where they got demolished.
By the Bears? Yeah, that I don't remember him being with the Patriots. I do remember him with the Cardinals.
He was a monster of a man. He was about 6'8", probably about 305 when he played. They weren't as big as they are, you know.
Oh, tell me about it.
Around 300 back then. They weren't over 300, the tackles back then.
Oh, that's why. Remember when John Elliott came out of Michigan and they called him Jumbo Elliott because he actually tipped the scales at a little over 300? Nowadays, he's a shrimp.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nowadays, you know, I was the other day. I was thinking about him, man, because he was a great guy. He had a voice like Herman Munster, though. He got your attention. I used to have to push him around on that sled, man. Imagine that, you know,
Herman Munster
in one end and him on the other going around in circles.
Can we bring Herman to play Herman Munster to play tackle this year?
Oh my
he was
God,
a big
I
dude,
wish, man. He's like I said, whenever he was my coach, he was like 330 more or less. He was older,
good
know,
stuff.
6'8", man. He was a ton of man. He was,
all right, Nick.
But he was a great guy, though. And like I said, those hand techniques, everything that he taught me that he learned in the pros, man, did it pay off. You know what I mean? But getting your pad level down lower, you know, definitely helps. But when you got a guy like hopefully what we pick up, man, it's really hard to bring guys like that down. That's why we need to get him.
All right, Nick, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in. Let's head back to the phone lines. We got Charlie in Queens. Charlie, what's happening? How we doing, Charlie?
Hello?
Yes, Charlie, you're on the air. What's happening?
Now, how you doing? I'm Travis.
Travis, okay.
Okay.
Sorry about that. So what do you got, Travis?
Sorry, how you guys doing?
Doing all right. How things with you?
Good. I was calling because I believe the Giants should let go of Jason Pierre-Paul. And here's why. For the reason being, I think with that money, we need to focus in the offensive line and other places. I mean, he's the same type of player as Oliver Vernon. If we lose him, if you want to consider the defensive line an A-plus type of defensive line, we only would drop to like an A-minus or just an A. And you know, Jason Pierre-Paul, he got a lot of tread on his tire. And on top of that, you know, he's not a home run guy. Like, he doesn't get home in 3 seconds. It takes him 4 to 5 seconds to get to the quarterback. And, you know, and with that time, that's sometimes not enough time. So, you know, if he was like a Strahan or a Tuck or an OC, I think you would consider bringing him back. But because he does the same thing like Vernon, you know what I mean, I believe like you could release him. And,
wow.
And you could take that money. Well, not that money, but you could take that position and get it in a draft younger, somebody that's a home run type of guy.
Well, I don't know if you're guaranteed to get a home run guy. I mean, remember, the Giants have some young guys currently on the roster who they've also been waiting to become that second in coming, and it's taken time for them to develop. So I wouldn't necessarily say that you lose JPP, you automatically get his replacement in the first or the second round. Sometimes it takes a year or two for the kid to develop.
I think I would like to dispute a little bit your thoughts on his impact because, see, for a defensive end, I like to catalog impact plays. Impact plays, which are sacks, quarterback hurries, quarterback hits, you know, and tackles for losses. Those are impact plays. Excuse me. Now, to me, that's where a guy shows his true value. For example, Olivier Vernon only had 7.5 sacks the year before he came to the Giants. And it's like, okay, was he top 25 or whatever in the league? And yet, he was the number one prize of free agency. Why? Because if you then looked at his pressures, his hits, his tackles for losses, impact plays, he was the premier guy. And he showed the Giants that he was indeed that guy. Well, if you look at JPP, look at his impact plays. You realize he is a premier defensive end in this league.
No, he definitely is. I'm not taking nothing away. He's definitely good.
Oh, okay. It sounded like you were dissing him. I don't know. No, it sounded like it to me.
No. I'm definitely not dissing him. I mean, he's definitely good. You know, definitely in a run game. I think that's another strong, tough spot.
No question.
He's one of the best run stuffers at his position. Yeah. You know, the other thing to take into consideration, Travis, and this goes even beyond what Paul was just talking about, and it doesn't even show up in the numbers, you have to wonder, JPP's presence, what it does for the other guys on the line. And what I mean by that is it's not going to show up, but by just having him there, how does the offensive line react to JPP being on the line compared to when you replace him with Romeo Okwara? And what type of opportunities open up for Olivier Vernon when JPP is opposite him? How much does it open up things for Hankins and Harrison when they're playing with Vernon and JPP to the right and left of them as opposed to a replacement? Those are the things that don't show up statistically that do have a very big impact on the team.
Just remember this.
It's dumb, but for the first 6 weeks of the season, though, it was like, boy, we was waiting for JPP to arrive. Like, he came on late. His biggest games was only against the Bengals. And
he was playing the run really well, though, since day one.
And Travis, see that. But here it goes. This goes back to, this goes back to what we're talking about. You're looking at solely his individual stats, and I'm saying you have to look at the big picture. What did he do for the rest of the defense? Not so much what JPP did on an individual basis, but how much did he open things up for the rest of the defense to play at the level it did this season?
Remember this, when an offensive coordinator.
Who had a better game, JPP or Okwara against the Cowboys?
Well, JPP didn't play in that game, so Okwara definitely had the better game.
The first game that JPP played then, who had a better game? Was it JPP or Okwara? Who do you think had a better game?
Opening night of the season. Opening night of the season. How are you going to compare that? Because Jason, from the beginning of the season, Jason played the run extremely well. His pass rush picked up as the season went on in terms of his ability to get the sacks. But don't disparage his play in week one just because he didn't get pass rush numbers.
So he played great week one. He definitely did. And the funniest thing, Ezekiel Elliott only scored when he came out.
Well, yeah. Ask him how JPP played that week. Here's what I will tell you. I will tell you this one thing. Make no mistake about this. If JPP is not here in the fall, offensive coordinators, when they game plan for the Giants, they will cheat protections toward Olivier Vernon. Whether it's a double team, whether it's a tight end, whether it's a running back chip, they will undoubtedly make his life a heck of a lot harder than it was this year. That is not to be disputed. It will happen. Trust me.
I mean, no, right. And let me make two more points and to piggyback on your point about JPP being good. Is you take the Eagles game when Lane Johnson came back, he destroyed Okwara. You know, they kept running that way. But what I'm saying is, in the first round at 23, I believe like if one of those guys out there that's highly mentioned, that's good, I think the Giants should go younger and go there. Because what I'm saying is, okay, do you consider the Giants the defensive front? Do you think they're A-plus defensive front, A-minus? What grade would you give them?
Oh, they're top five in the league.
They have one of the best front fours in the NFL based on this right. past season.
So, without right, question.
Right. So with them being the top five, so they got to be like an A-plus if you was grading them. Now, if you take JPP off, don't you guys agree that we just dropped down probably to an A or a B-plus?
It's hard to say. I mean, you don't have a big enough sample size with Romeo Okwara or any of JPP's replacements for more than about three or four games. That's only a quarter of a season.
Here's where I'll agree with you. I know you're trying to make a point about he's replaceable, and here's where I will agree with you. If you break the bank to keep both Hankins and JPP, you are really going to be handcuffed in terms of what else you can do. And I understand that, which is why I don't think the Giants can chase JPP's finances to the moon. If someone right. backs up the Brinks truck for him, he's going to wind up going, and you're not going to be able to chase him up the ladder. And I understand that. If that does happen, it's my opinion that the defensive end would be in play at pick 23 for the Giants. I don't think I would pick a defensive end at 23 if JPP resigns. If he does not, it would be in play.
But what if at that 23, the Giants get, let's say, come free agency, so they get a Riley Reiff, if they get Reiff, if we could shore up our offense in the free agency, that and then you don't think that we could come 23 go after a defensive end?
I would consider it. I depends on which one of these stud defensive ends is sitting there at 23. I would not rule it out, but to your point, if they are able to enhance the offensive line in free agency, okay, and maybe even potentially grab a decent wide receiver, a big, tall wide receiver in free agency, that opens up that drafting spot to me for when they talk best guy available, a pass rusher. Potentially even a tight end. They're talking about some of these tight ends might be there. I mean, you might consider that if you're going to fill these other spots. I'll be honest with you, too. I wouldn't even be adverse to them taking a defensive tackle if they see value there.
For depth purposes, absolutely.
Because, you know, they want to play a rotation. They want to play a rotation. How'd you like to have a third stud defensive tackle behind Hankins and Snacks?
Well, and we talked about the depth chart of defensive end versus defensive tackle, and right now it looks like there's a little bit more strength at defensive end. There's no doubt about that. And Travis, listen, we got to let you go. We got a few more phone calls that we want to squeeze in. Appreciate you for chiming in.
Let's head back
to the lines. Valid point, valid question. We got Bill in Phoenix. Bill, what's happening?
Hi, guys. I sort of agree with Travis that I would let JPP walk also. To me, for when I watch the defensive line play, the difference maker on that defensive line is not JPP. The difference maker is Snacks Harrison. When JPP and Hankins a couple years ago were the star players on that defensive line, that defensive line finished last in the NFL in rushing, almost last in the yards. As soon as they brought in Harrison and Vernon, that defensive line went from average to very good.
Well, you brought in two guys, by the way, that are not just good at getting to the quarterback, but they're good at stopping the run, keep in mind.
JPP is not the dominant player on that line. Matter of fact, he ain't even the second best player on the line. He's probably the third best player on the line.
I got a better question for you, because I agree with you. I don't think you can say to Hankins and JPP, both of you guys, here's a blank check. You know, we'll go to any extremes possible to keep you both. I don't think you can do that. That's not economically sound philosophy in the National Football League. You can't do it. So now, what if I said to you, though, that they could bring back Hankins at top 10 defensive tackle money, and they could bring back JPP at the money he got, roughly, at the money he got last year. If I said that to you, and you could keep this front four intact without breaking the bank, you're going to tell me you wouldn't be okay with that?
I'm not saying I wouldn't be okay with that, but I would think my strategy would be that I would rather see some of that, get an average defensive end, and I would like to see that go for like a monster wide receiver, like that guy from Chicago,
Alshon Jeffery,
somebody like that.
Yeah, but you know, Jeffery.
I'm looking at the game, and I see like our number two receiver. I disagree with that other guy. Said Shepard's on number two. And, I mean, that's crazy. He's like 5'10", and he ain't gonna win 50-50 balls. But
well, Shepard plays
like
bigger than his size, Bill.
Could you imagine Alshon Jeffery with Beckham and the other? I think that takes our offense to that next level where Eli could excel. But I don't think losing JPP is that much of a difference maker where I think Jeffery would be.
I would say this. Usually veteran superstar free agent wide receivers get way overpaid when they land with a new team. You do not get proper value for your money when chasing after those guys. So philosophically speaking, I would be totally against your thoughts on that.
Well, you know, a lot of people are against when they sign Plexico. And, you know, it's what happens in the game.
Plex did not get top dollar when he came here. If you remember, there were a lot of teams in the NFL that thought his enigmatic ways were not going to fit their club. And so there were only like three or four teams that were in the mix when Burris was a free agent. And the Giants did not have to pay top dollar to get him.
Well, yeah, maybe that's true. But I still think that the way offenses are conducted nowadays, our opponents had to do is stop Beckham, and then we shot all our bullets. We didn't have no other answer.
Well, but
Beckham.
Bill, remember the lack of a consistent running game.
And then it was just dink and dunk and punt and field goal.
But Bill,
we need
Bill,
another monster.
Bill, you're
on the outside there to get the 50-50 balls.
Bill, you're overlooking the fact that also the lack of consistency with the run game was also a big factor that was missing, and that's also would have helped the offense, not just necessarily having a big targeted wide receiver. And appreciate the phone call.
Here's where he is right, though.
A lot of other factors. Other than just the lack of a tall target.
There were factors involved here, but here's where he is right. If you can add a skyscraping receiver to this core, you need to do it. I mean, that to me is absolutely on my want list for this club. But he doesn't have to be a high-priced Pro Bowl guy.
Well, that's the thing.
He can be, as we've discussed, even free agents like Quick and Holmes. These guys are 6'3", 6'4", and they're proving something in this league. They're not going to cost a ton of money, and they'll be productive for you. Look, I'll give you a great example. Ed McCaffrey, Joe Giravicious, okay? These were skyscraping receivers for the Giants who were not ones or twos, okay? They were a little bit back on the depth chart, albeit they wound up doing a lot of great things for other teams later on. But that's what you need on this team right now. You don't need a 6'4" guy who's going to be talking about going to the Pro Bowl in Hawaii because that guy's going to cost you mega bucks. Jeffrey is not what you want here or what you need.
And that's what I'm saying. You could even go in the draft and get that too.
Absolutely.
You don't even have to spend mega money to fill that void.
No doubt.
You know, plus, remember, I also would want a guy, if you're trying to build a team, who's not just 6'4", but also this goes back to the tight end position, Paul, that we were talking about earlier. You also want to make sure that 6'4 guy doesn't mind getting down and dirty on the line of scrimmage and blocking a little too, by the way, when you need to maybe run off the edge. Let's not forget about that.
Wouldn't hurt.
So, you know, you could bring in a 6'4"
Holmes
guy.
Holmes plays special teams, by the way, for the Raiders.
Well, that was one of the guys that we've talked about on previous shows, and I don't think you're going to have to break open the bank, and I also don't think you'd have to break open the bank to get somebody in that height vicinity in maybe the third or the fourth round of the draft,
so
which can't be done.
I agree with him, and I think you do, that they need a skyscraping receiver who's going to be able to make those plays. I'm with you there, and I think you are too. The problem is you're going about it a different way, a much more expensive way, which to me just doesn't make sense.
Well, because free agency is about putting in the money and getting an immediate return, not putting in the money so that maybe you get the return 3 or 4 years down the road. If you look at free agency this past season, they invested in Snacks, they invested in Vernon, they invested in Jenkins. They got an immediate return on those investments. Why? Those three guys in particular were proven commodities.
And a high level of return,
correct,
too.
Now you want to say to yourself, if you're going to go spend money this offseason, if you invest in Hankins and JPP, you at least know what you're going to get out of those guys.
You do.
As opposed to going into the land of the unknown where maybe you don't know if you're going to get that type of return. That's how you have to think about when you spend money. Let's head back to the lines. We got Chris in New Jersey. Chris, what's happening?
Hi, fellas. Thanks for taking my call. Great show.
Well, thanks for making the call. Appreciate it.
A little bit of a flashback real quick. Gary Brown back in the late 90s was a nice pickup by the Giants. A little bowling ball. Actually, I think rushed for over 1,000 yards
he
in 98
did.
With the Giants.
Yeah, he did. Last game of the season, they were in Philadelphia at the old Vet, and he wound up eclipsing 1,000 yards, made Ernie Accorsi feel really good. Gary went on many years to be an assistant running backs coach in college, including at Rutgers for a short time. Good guy. Real good guy, and you're right. Shorter, squattier guy, thick legs, and was a might have been comeback player of the year, or at least was in contention when he got the 1,000 for the Giants, because he had had a plethora of injuries earlier in his career. In fact, when the Giants signed him, he had come off injury. Then the following year, he went and got hurt again, and then his career was over.
Good stuff. My question to you guys is, you know, when you look at the NFC East, how much emphasis do the Giants or any other NFC East pay attention to their rivals, and more so than any other division, in terms of the free agents? You look at some of the guys, Antonio Pierce, Chris Canty, Martellus Bennett, Dwayne Harris, Keenan Robinson, just to name a few. I know the Giants have had a few misses early on with guys like Carlos Emmons or even like a Brian Mitchell. But do you believe that the Giants tend to look at those NFC rivals a little bit more, because it brings a little bit more motivation maybe with these players, signing them over from a rival team?
No,
what do you think?
No, what I can tell you is what happens when you see a guy up close and personal twice a season, and obviously, you know, you're scouting, but you also have them in those games against your players, you may get a little bit more of a feel for them. And your coaching staff certainly can tell you, hey, when we tried the game plan against that guy, he was a big problem for us. And this is why. Have your scouts and your personnel department take a look at this, because this is what we had to deal with when we played him. That may be a little bit of what you get when you're signing a free agent within your division. More of a familiarity, more of an understanding maybe of what he really does. That's
right.
The difference. I don't think you're signing guys within your division because of motivation or because you want to necessarily hurt the other team. It may simply be because your book is a little bit more detailed on that player because you know more about him.
Well, plus the other example is Ben McAdoo mentioned this. They played the Dolphins 2 years ago, and they saw Vernon and how disruptive he was.
And he was a nightmare
for them. And he was one of their targets in free agency. So I would agree with Paul. I think it goes back to who you've studied, who you've seen quite often. You have a better idea of what that player brings to the table, as opposed to just saying, well, if he comes from the Redskins or the Giants, he's going to be motivated to beat Washington 2 times a year.
Yeah, that's not going to do much.
I don't really think that's part of the philosophy.
No.
Yeah.
Right. And last thing, I know you guys got to run. Terrence Newman with the Cowboys, what's your feeling on him being like a tier two type of receiver?
He's an interesting guy that kind of fits into the mold that we're talking about.
Terrence Williams, by the way.
Terrence
Newman was their corner.
Newman, right.
Yeah. Who
good
went
catch.
To the Vikings, yes. Because I had to think for a second. I didn't know what he was talking about.
You know he's been an underachiever, you know, with the Cowboys.
In terms of the wide receiver, Terrence Williams.
Yes. Williams has been an underachiever. Now, is that the kind of guy who can come in at a low to moderate price with a change of scenery? He's had some experience. He can do some things for you. I would say he would intrigue me. I don't know that he'd be my top target, but I certainly would be intrigued enough that I'd probably investigate.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think he is an intriguing type of guy. I don't think that he's exploded to maybe the degree that Dallas anticipated. However, what I will say is, keep in mind, you have Dez, you have Cole Beasley, you have Jason Witten. There's only so many footballs that could go around. It's similar to, and I don't want to say it's identical, but it's very similar to the Martellus Bennett situation, where you may have a guy that just wants to break out of his shell and perhaps go to a team where he thinks he's going to get more targets. But, you know, if he's not going to get a lot of interest, Dallas may say it's worth investing in a guy like that because we don't have to now open up the bank to make sure that we retain him.
You know,
depends
what
on
would,
how much interest I think
you know
he
what
receives.
I would like to see? One of the first things I'd want to do if I were the pro personnel director and I were bringing Terrence Williams in, one of the first things that I would do is I'd want to get video, cut-up video. I'd go to the cut-up guys and say, give me video on all of the high throws that have gone to him over the last 2 years. And I want to see how many times did he win those 50-50 balls and how many times did he just go up and get it. Even balls that weren't 50-50 balls, just balls he was able to go out and get with whatever it is that his wingspan is. Because to me, that's going to be a key component if the Giants are going to go after one of these taller receivers. And he's only 6'2", or is he 6'3"?
Let's see. I can tell you right now in terms of
before we go, because I know we got to get out of here. We're running over time.
Terrence Williams is 6'2".
That's what I thought. You know, what's his wingspan, though? That's what we got to find out. I need to see efficiency in going up to get those high balls and those 50-50 balls that you got to fight for. That, to me, is going to be a huge component in bringing anybody in.
I mean, Dez is the type of guy that really demanded those types of throws. So, I mean, just off the top of my head, they didn't really use him in that degree. But I still think it's somebody worth investigating. All right, before we wrap up the show, we got Joe in Pennsylvania. Joe, what's happening?
Hey, hi, guys.
How we doing, Joe?
Paul. How would that Gary Brown, would he add up to that running back you said to complement our running back in a draft you want to think? How does Gary Brown add up to our that?
Well, Gary Brown was here. We're talking about the guy who played before?
No, I'm talking about the guy you said you'd like to see the Giants draft to complement our running
back. Yeah, Perine, Samaje Perine from Oklahoma.
Yeah, how does he?
He'd be phenomenal. Think of Natron Means, who played for the Chargers years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Think of him.
I was just wondering about Gary Brown. If he's in Gary Brown's field, he's dynamite. That's all.
Okay. So, trust me when I tell you, Perine is a real bowling ball of a back. Trust me when I tell you that. And if you don't believe me, check him out on the web. You'll find video of him. It's plentiful.
Okay, I have one question there, quick there. I want to ask you: is there our main unit we have to fix and get going to make it to the Super Bowl? As I'm thinking, is the offense, and I'm just wondering there if we would get a chance to draft that tight end from Alabama, and we could get any other tackle in the draft too. Could that tight end from Alabama be more important to our offense with the being a big receiver and a big running back or a blocking back to help our offense than any other offensive tackle that we could draft this year that be in a draft? You think he could be?
I'm going to make this real quick.
Choice.
I'm going to make it real quick. If the Giants can upgrade the offensive line and get a power back, I would not be adverse to taking someone like O.J. Howard at 23. If he's there, I don't think he will be.
I think it's a long shot.
If they don't get those other spots, then I'm not real thrilled with taking a tight end to 23.
Everybody I see anymore, Howard's being drafted after the Giants, so that's what I'm just
good luck
by.
With that one.
And I'm just wondering if he would be better than taking any other tackle today developing with Eli getting older, you know what I mean, that you want it in there right away and that to help our offense to achieve it if you have your
Let's
choice.
Put it this way. If you had signed – I'm going to use examples here. If you sign a Reef to help your O-line, you sign a Lacy to help your backfield, then you want to go ahead and draft O.J. Howard if he's there at 23, I will applaud you. But there are other spots that need to be filled in conjunction with that tight end.
That are a bigger priority than the tight end position.
Yes.
Yeah, you have to see how the rest of your house looks before I think you target a tight end.
I was just wondering if Howard would mean more to the offense than, you know what I mean, drafting somebody
else. I don't think
so. Not sure if we get anybody.
I don't think so.
With Johnson back there in the backfield,
I know.
Too, as a
I love Will Johnson, but no, you got to do more than that to beef up the power running game. That's like fixing the attic before you fix the foundation of the house.
Well, I was just thinking he'd help the receiving game. He could be good in the red zone too, you know, or the green zone, whatever you want.
I hear you.
He could mean a whole lot more to the offense than any tackle we take. That's going to take a couple years to develop again. That's
Eli's
going
to have a hard time reaching that getting the ball to him if he's on his back.
Yeah,
too.
That's the key. The offensive line dictates the rest of the offense, Joe. And listen, appreciate
Joe,
the phone
take
call.
Care.
Thanks so much for chiming in. You got to make sure
that
the line, yes, is in place so that obviously the rest of the offense can flourish, not necessarily giving him extra toys if the blocking is not there and the continuity is not there. All right, that's going to wrap up Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We're back here Thursday and Friday, noon Eastern, as we'll continue the dialogue with respect to the upcoming scouting combine, free agency news, your phone calls, your tweets. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. We'll speak to you tomorrow right here on Giants.com.